Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 9, 2014, or is the 13th day of the 4th lunar month, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Near to the Heart of Yah. There is a place of quiet rest near to the heart of Yah, a place where sin cannot molest, near to the heart of Yah. Oh, Yahshua bless Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. O mercy, wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah. There is a place of comfort sweet, near to the heart of Yah, a place where we our Savior meet, near to the heart of Yah. Oh, Yahshua, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. Oh, mercy wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah. There is a place of full release, near to the heart of Yah. A place where all is joy and peace, near to the heart of Yah. Oh, Yahshua, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. Oh, mercy wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah. Part 6, Jezreel's Letter Number 8 by V.T. Holler. For our own page 6, first we're going to refer to a prayer thought taken from Isaiah chapter 26. It says, in that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city, salvation with Elham Point for walls and bulwarks. Open ye the gates that the righteous nation which keepeth the truth may enter in. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Trust in the Yahweh forever, for in the Yahweh Elohim is everlasting strength. For he bringeth down them that dwell on high, the holy city. He layeth it low, even unto the ground. He brings it even to the dust. And this is happening right today in Israel. They are finally at that place where it looks like this could very well be the beginning of Zechariah's 14 war, when all nations come against Jerusalem to battle, because they have prepared for it by stopping all peace talks and negotiations in that vein. So now it's nothing but all the Arab nations outline themselves, including the United States, leading out in it to lead the Muslim world against their half-brother Isaac. And they intend to take over not only Jerusalem, but the whole nation of Israel, and drive every last Israelite off of the land. Isaiah 26, verse 6. For the foot shall tread it down, even the feet of the poor and the steps of the needy. For the way of the just is uprightness. Thou most upright doth weigh the path of the just. Yea, in the way of thy judgments, O Yahweh, have we waited for thee. For the desire of our soul is unto thy name and unto the remembrance of thee. With my soul have I desired thee in the night, yea, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early. For when thy judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. That favor be showed unto the wicked, yet will he not learn righteousness. And that's what happened here. We showed favor unto these people that moved on our property, claiming that they were sincere in learning the truth and wanting to unite with others that were in the truth, and they proved to be false brethren. And so it says we showed them great favor. But it's at a terrible cost. So likewise with a brother that has been supporting us all these years, 33 years, we've showed favor after favor after favor after favor, hundreds of times. And yet, the bottom line is he didn't learn righteousness in the land of uprightness. Now, the hill countries of Judea, here in Judah, here in Texas, is a land of uprightness. This is where Yahshua led us to, because this is his choice, and the place where he's going to establish the headquarters for the everlasting kingdom of David is set up starting right here in Liberty Hill, Texas. In the land of uprightness will he deal unjustly, and will not behold the majesty of the Yahshua. Okay, for the Yahshua, when thy hand is lifted up, they will not see. Verily, they shall see and be ashamed for their envy at the people. Yea, the fire of thine enemies shall devour them. Yahweh, thou wilt ordain peace for us, for thou also hast wrought all our works in us. O Yahweh, our Elohim, other masters beside thee have had dominion over us, but by thee only will we make mention of thy name. They are dead, they shall not live. They are deceased, they shall not rise. Therefore hast thou visited and destroyed them, and made all their members to perish. Thou hast increased the nation, O Yahweh, thou hast increased the nation. Thou art glorified, and thou hast removed it far unto all the ends of the earth. Yahweh, in trouble have they visited thee, for they poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them, like as a woman with a child that draws near unto the time of her delivery is in pain and cries out in her pains, and so have we been in thy sight, O Yahweh. We have been with child, we have been in pain, we have as it were brought forth wind. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth, neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. So this is the bottom line right here, verse 18. We have been with child. Well, the Gilead Center, Mount Zion, the 11th hour, Kermit, Texas, they were the one that was with the antypical child, Yahshua. They had a message called the Isaac Branch Message. That's the name of Yahshua in the message. Okay, and so that was given to Gilead Center. They had it for 33 years. And they had been in pain. Yeah. They said, we have been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind, though. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. And they can truly say that they haven't wrought any, they didn't bring any deliverance in the earth. But there's a prophecy that says in the 12th hour that Michael stands up and there is deliverance with him. And also, those saviors that comes up on Mount Zion, the judge, the Mount of Esau, their deliverance with them. And it says also in Joel, and in the remnant whom he shall call. So there is deliverance. But this Mount Zion's 11th hour, they're complaining. It says, we have been with child. We have been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind, though. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. Earth and prophecy means the United States. So they haven't brought any deliverance to any of the Seventh-day Adventists here in the United States. Because they're the ones that are to come before the judgment bar first, starting with their leader. And that started in 2002 at Kermit. Neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. See? But now, and we got this war shaping up now in Jerusalem. And after that takes place, then all the inhabitants of the world, all the wicked nations, are going to fall. One after another. Thy dead men shall live together, with thy dead body shall they arise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in the dust. For thy dew is as the dew of the earth, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, the Yahshua cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no more cover her slain. End of our prayer thought. Now let us go into our main study. We're on page 6 of Ezekiel's letter number 8, last paragraph. It says, of course, it is incredible that ministers of the gospel would deal with truth so crookedly, but here you have the naked fact. Shall you close your ears unto Elohim's pleading word and your eyes to what the master enemy, the devil, makes the so-called men of experience? Men of the experience? Yes, but of what kind? Do you see how deeply the sins are deceived and who deceive them? No, not wolves in sheep's clothing, but devil agents in ministerial garbs and in no lesser degree than did his agents in the priestly garb deceive the people in the Yahshua's day. Please do not misunderstand me. I am not speaking with the malice in my heart, but in the hope of awakening the sleeping Laodicean. No, I hate no one. And I'm saying no more, no, not even near as much as Yahshua himself. And John the Baptist said when he uttered the following against men of the experience in their day. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for pretense make long prayers. Therefore you shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of the mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone, ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisees, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them stop may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of the dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because ye build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers of them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore, ye be witnesses unto yourselves, that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell? Matthew 23:14-16, 23-33. But when he, John, saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come. Matthew 3:7. It says, when he, John, saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Matthew 3:7. No, my friend, he who now tells you that the rod criticizes would have just as quickly accused the Yahweh if he had been living in his day. For the rod accuses none, it only tells the truth as Elohim gives it. There is nothing in the excerpts from the Bible and from the Spirit of the Prophecy, which the brochure quotes, that says or implies that the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 takes place after the probation closes for the world. Search and see. These anti-rod ministers may claim to be divinely appointed, but if they are, then let them remember that Aaron's two sons, Nadab and Abihu, were also divinely appointed. Nevertheless, after the disobeying, they dropped dead. Also let them remember that the lukewarm angel minister of the church of the latter sin is to be spewed out, and let them not forget that only those who have overcome temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to active part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Well, this, when it swells into the loud cry, it's with the fifth angel that swells the message into the loud cry. It says, the review and the herald, November 19, 1908. Neither let them overlook the fact that only a few great men will then be engaged in the work, and that those who have trusted unto intellect, genius, and talent will not then be the leaders in the work. That Elohim has other servants whom he is in to disclose to view. Read Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80-81. Ever remember that judgment begins at the sanctuary. Read Ezekiel 9:2-7 and 1 Peter 4:17. So the sanctuary today is the house of David. It says, let's continue reading now on page 9. It says, the shepherd's rod considers as Seventh-day Adventist doctrines only those which are approved by the inspiration. But these anti-rodders call Seventh-day Adventist doctrines everything that is taught in the church, be it true or untrue. Then they compare their man-made doctrines with the doctrines of the shepherd's rod, and because the doctrines disagree, they make it appear that the rod is in error. Here is one heresy with which the rod disagrees. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000, and I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire and of jasmine and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of the lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Revelation 9:16-17. This is the picture which John gives of the 200 million horses and horsemen. So when you say 200 million horses, then you say the horseman that rides them is another 200 million. So you have 400 million of heavenly angels involved with 200 million leaders here, Christians in the world that come out, that is being harvested into this great army. Okay, now compare inspiration's own description of the horses and horsemen with the denomination's illustration of them as given in Thoughts on the Daniel and Revelation, page 510. Why cannot the denomination in their exposition of the trumpets use inspiration's own description of the horses and horsemen? Why did they have to devise one of their own? For the only answer that can be given is that the Spirit's own description does not fit their uninspired interpretations of the Scripture. One's inability to interpret correctly without heaven's gift of the interpretation, however, is expected and is excusable. But to say that the vision was shown unto the revelator at so great a distance that he was unable accurately to see the kinds of the heads and tails the horses had, and where the fire, the smoke, and the brimstone came from, in order to tailor the vision to accord with their interpretation of it, is not only defiance against Yahshua's warning concerning adding to and subtraction from the Scripture, Revelation 22:18-19, but is also outright blasphemy. Do you now see who is teaching error and who is deceiving the people? For the anti-rodus accusations that the rod is calling the church Babylon is another falsehood. The rod proves that the church is not Babylon, and that is the reason for which its adherents stay in it instead of coming out of it. And this is the very reason for which the anti-rodus are trying to keep them out of the churches. As to what the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13 is, we all know that the denomination has no established doctrine on it. Let us therefore look at it in the light of the revealed truth for today. Since the leopard-like beast is a part of the symbolical beast of the Daniel 7, we shall herein take a look at all the Bible beasts in the one picture. Okay, it says these beasts of the Daniel's vision are symbolic of the world in several different periods. For example, let us look at the fourth beast in both its phases. First, it was seen to have 10 horns. Then another little horn came up among the 10, and 3 were uprooted. No sensible Bible student would disagree that this beast, as all the others, do represents the world. Daniel's fourth beast pictures the regime of the pagan Rome, and then the regime of the papal Rome, the world in that day. For all Adventists, I teach that the entire beast symbolism does not represent the papacy, that only the little horn, which had a mouth and spake like a man, represents the papacy. But the other horns represent the kingdoms that were to arise at that time, and that the beast, in his second face, depicts both the world's civil and religious powers. Since the little horn is a combination of the horn and head, it depicts a church and state's system, civil and religious power. In the like manner, the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13 does not in its entirety represent the papacy. The papacy is represented only by its one head, the head that was wounded. Its 10 horns, the same as in the Daniel's fourth beast, represents the kingdoms of the world. So as the Daniel's beast depicts the world of that day, John's beast depicts the world of today. Its horns are crowned because it depicts the world after one of the heads was wounded, after the kingdoms took their thrones and reigned independent of the church. Now since the wounded head represents a church, a religious system, and since all 7 heads are on the beast at the same time, not coming up or dropping out one after another, the head symbolism is positively depicting a multi-sectarian world, the churches of today. So we have heaven's graphic picture of the world, as it actually has been ever since the church-state system was beaten out of it, and ever since multi-sectarianism came in. This is the Bible, and this is in the truth. Since the number 7 is the biblical number for the whole, and since the blasphemy is over all the 7 heads and not over the horns, the picture in the light of the present truth clearly depicts Christianity with the apostasy and the blasphemies in the anti-rod literature. Clinches that fact, for the Reformation inflicted the wound and apostasy healed the wound. associating the name Babylon with this beast is adding to the word of the Elohim. And as they do this in order to fight truth, the act is blasphemy. There is nothing on the beast to indicate Babylon. Babylon is depicted by the scarlet-colored beast, Revelation 17, the beast that depicts the world after the church is purified, after the image of the beast is made, after a second church and state government comes into the being. The next world regime, it is Babylon. This is a day in which all things are to be restored, and this is a day for each individual, independent of another, to decide whether or not these anti-rod teachers are the antitypical prophets of the Baal. Faithful years for the opening open eyes to the truth and for a heart to judge a message by the word, not by who brought it. V.H. Jezreel. Again, Vicky Hall signs his name, Jezreel. So, see, he's claiming for sure to be Jezreel. For sure the antitypical Jezreel, which is the master prophet, which means that he can be whatever the prophecy calls for, but it calls for a master prophet in the 12th hour. It calls for an antitypical Elijah. It calls for an antitypical David. It calls for an antitypical Ezekiel. And all these prophets that wrote the prophecies for this 12th hour, for the end time, it calls for an antitype of a master prophet to interpret these prophecies. In other words, Ezekiel translates into being antitypical David. And so does all these other prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Amos, Joel. Okay? And especially Elijah. Malachi, especially Malachi. Okay, and Daniel. Okay, so all your minor prophets translates into one big master prophet giving the interpretation and dovetailing all their prophecies into one complete whole, making perfect sense. End of letter chapter 8. We're going to go right on into chapter 9 now. This is the last letter of the series of the Jezreel's letters. And it's entitled Guaranteed Prosperity and Security. Dear SDA Present Truth Believer, it says here, Vicki Hall is addressing the Seventh-day Adventists once again for the last time with his letters. This is a personal message unto you of how to prosper and enjoy life unto the fullest measure. So this letter should have been read by Verlis Johnson at the end of his ministry there in 2003, somewhere along the line. He should have read this. It would have been, because it was a message directly toward him more than anybody. Prosperity and security are here guaranteed. Insurance policy that knows no limit. I am therefore rushing this unto you and hope that you will enjoy it and profit by it. Here is how it works. What in your own natural for a prophet to pass on the latest inspiration to his successors, and that would be to Ben Roden and then Verlis Johnson after Ben Roden. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Yahshua of hosts, Malachi 3:1. For the promise here is that Yahweh will send a messenger. And as the fourth chapter of Malachi is but a continuation of the story in the third, we are there told that the messenger in the antitypical, or is with the antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, which is Elijah David today, the one who is to restore all things. Okay, here it is. Matthew 17:11, an inspiration of a latter edition and in a special message unto the Seventh-day Adventist ministry warrant. Prophecy must be fulfilled. Yahshua said, behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah. And when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest, you do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. Testimonies of Ministers, page 475, 476. Now I want to say once again, Alan DeLong was the one that identified me as the Elijah. that was to come. And I mean, he pinpointed that in several places in the rod. And I said, well, I guess so. I hadn't seen it yet. I didn't know that. So then 12 years later, Alan says, no, you're not the man. No, you're claiming titles that don't belong to you. And then he quoted Jonah where it says that if I take on flattering titles, my master will soon come and take me away. So here he is. So Alan has to say then that he was given false light when he pointed at me and said, well, are you the man? I said, well, I guess so. He said, yeah, you're the man. You're the man. So you see what I'm talking about? When you don't continue to walk in the rays of the present truth every day, when you go off on a side track and you go down a rabbit trail and you get sidetracked, and then you want to come back and make your way back, you don't see the truth the way you used to see it anymore when you do things like that. And that's what happened here. It says, there are two main points to note in these quotations. Number one, that the message and messengers are mentioned. The messengers here mentioned are the very last. Number two, that they are to restore all things. Number three, that there is danger for some to make fools themselves by daring to tell him how to teach his message, assuming to take Elohim's place. Now, this is exactly what I told Alan. And I read this to him when he was doing that. I said, you're not going to tell me how to teach my message. I said, inspiration warns against that. I said, you don't tell Yahweh's servant how to teach his message. And I said, in essence, that's what you're doing. You're demanding that I change the way I teach things. Okay? And I'm telling you, you're in the wrong. And I said, you're out of place. And sure enough, it's caution. This verse in Malachi 3, as you will readily see, met only a partial typical fulfillment with John the Baptist, and let us continue. It says, for this verse of the Malachi 3, as you will readily see, met only a partial typical fulfillment with John the Baptist, and that its antitypical fulfillment is now not only imminent, but that aside from the Yahshua's first advent, it is the most important. Let us now notice what's most important. For the promise is that the Yahweh is to send a messenger, someone with a message, and that with it the messenger is to prepare the way for the Yahshua's coming to his temple. So, we're looking for Yahshua to come to his temple, and his temple was Mount Zion, the 11th hour in Kermit, Texas, 2002. And I was a messenger that was sent there to prepare the way, to show the Gilead sinner how to prepare themselves to get their sins blotted out on the Day of Atonement, 2002. This is when this time it is fulfillment. The Yahshua's purpose for coming, you will note, is to purify his temple. And that's what he did. He took three people that was signed crime for the abomination, and he took them out of there in 2002. And now one of them has twisted off. And that's now down to two. The church, and in particular, the Levites, the ministry. Okay, the Yahshua's purpose for the coming, you will know, it is the purifier's temple, that is, the Church of the 11th Hour Adventist, at Kermit, Texas, in 2002, and in particular, the Levites, the ministry, and that would be the 144,000 that would come forth, the priesthood. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appears? For he is like refiner's fire, like fuller's soap, and he shall sit as refiner and purify the silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in righteousness. Malachi 3, 2 and 3. No, not before this work is done for the ministry. Can they offer acceptable offerings unto the Elohim? You know, Plain it is that this chapter of the Malachi was especially written for the faithful people of Elohim at this very time, the time in which the purification of the church takes place, the time that the good fish are put into the vessel and the bad cast away, Matthew 13:47-48. After purification takes place, you know that then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be present unto the Yahweh, as in the days of old and as in the former years, Malachi 4:4. And I will come near unto you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the adulterers, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow, and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith Yahshua of old, for I am the Yahweh, I change not. Therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Malachi 4:5-6. Here inspiration explains how the judgment for the living begins, how the cleansing of the sanctuary on the earth takes place, Daniel 8:14, and having unveiled his people's shocking irresponsibility towards the unfortunate ones among them, and their taking advantage of others whenever possible, he then reassures that he changes not, that he is the same unerring and just Elohim, that his ancient statutes and ordinances are everlasting, that he has not changed them, that he will restore all things. He, as you will see, finally comes to the real trouble, then pleads his people accept his remedy. Says he, even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, says Yahshua of hope. But you say, wherein shall we return? Malachi 3:7. Since his people still do not see wherein they have departed from his ordinances, he specifically points out and immediately pleads for the action. Will a man rob Elohim? Yet ye have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings, you are cursed with a curse. For ye have robbed me, even this whole nation, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, and that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith Yahshua of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Malachi 3:8-10. For the phrase, even this whole nation, robbing Elohim, is so because the old message, the judgment for the dead, for the proclamation of which the Seventh-day Adventist denomination was specifically called forth, is now out of the date, as is the message of the Noah's flood, and as the denominational officials have already rejected the message of the judgment for the living, but are still collecting tithes of the people, they as a nation, as a denomination, are robbing Elohim. There are many precious truths contained in the word of the Elohim, but it is present truth that the flock needs now. Early Writings, page 63. Note that not to the Levites or to some other place or people, but unto the Elohim storehouse are the tithes and offerings to be brought, and for no other reason than that his storehouse may have the means to dispense spiritual food, meat in the due season. These words definitely and positively show that the only support which the message of the purification of the church has for the carrying on his work is the tithes and the offerings from his faithful people, that in no other way could the message be dispensed, that in no other way could the expenses be paid. This is Elohim's reason for no plate passing now in our gatherings, for no money raising in any form, and for scattering our literature everywhere as the leaves of the autumn, without the money, without price unto the people. In other words, the literature, the ministers, and the Bible workers, those who bring the message of the hour unto your door, are to be paid by the tithes and offerings that come into the Yahshua storehouse. For the Elohim therefore asks his faithful people to gladly respond unto his call and sufficiently to supply the need. He asks this not only for the prosperity of his storehouse, but for his people's prosperity as well. Now, I remember Brother Johnson said to me one time, if I had the money, I'd put you out, you and Alan DeLong, out in the field, bringing in converts and creating tithe payers here and people that can be as servants here to work in the kingdom. I would do that, but I don't have the money. All the time he had over $50,000 in a kitty that had been earmarked for the gospel work for such a time by his mother-in-law, had been saving money for 50 years just for that. Yet he lied. See, he lied to me, and he lied to the Holy Spirit, and so forth. Because what happened is he had turned that money over to his wife's supervision and put it under her control. And she was greedy, and she was a thief at heart anyway. And so it was no problem for her to appropriate that money to herself and use it for her own cause. So Brother Johnson, he just made one mistake after another through life, and not following the Bible's instructions on how to handle all these things. Why must the message bearers come to your door in order to bring the message to you? Because, as you already know, most of the ministers have closed the church doors and led these minds and hearts against the Yeshua's message for today. Brother Johnson, in law, made this say to me one day, he said, why don't you keep your tithes and offerings, and because you're doing so much work for the church anyway, just use it for your expenses for the church. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, I'm going to pay my tithes and offerings here and give my service to the church for free. I said, that is an offering. And so I continue to pay my tithes and offerings. This they have done in no lesser degrees than the priest did in Yahshua's day. The Yahshua's way back in Jeremiah's time foresaw that the angel ministry of the church of the latter sins would do this wicked thing against him and his people so as to keep forever the latter sins in their self-deception. Speaking of the ancient Israel's dispersion among the nations and of the antipical Israel's gathering, in the 16th chapter of Jeremiah's prophecy, inspiration explains thus. Behold, I will send for many fishers, saith Yahweh, and they shall fish them. And after will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes of rocks. Jeremiah 16:16. Here you are plainly told that in the gathering time, the servants of Elohim are compelled first to fish his people, then to hunt them. Since our first contact with them has been through the literature, it therefore must be the fishing rightly too, so too, because as it is scattered everywhere as the leaves of the autumn, the fish come to examine it, find it good for food, take a bite, and get hooked, so to speak. Now, however, we are in the hunting period, and we have already begun to hunt them, be they in the city or in the country, in the places easy to get to, or in the places hard to get to. Wherever they live, there they must be hunted, although it will not be a small, easy task to catch at the home, sometimes like 300,000 or more Adventists scattered throughout the United States alone. Besides, over 500,000 are more scattered throughout the foreign lands. This, you see, is mighty expensive work, demanding many hunters with expensive chariots. Cheaper ones could not stand the task, covering the hundreds of thousands of miles and requiring as many barrels of gasoline and oil. This is not a small task. Proportionately, there has never been the like, and will therefore take the united strength of every present truth believer to keep them going and get the work done so that we can soon go to glory land. Yes, it is a great undertaking and a great work with a great promise, requiring multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars and all the able and willing bodies he can get to hunt hundreds of thousands of Seventh-day Adventists in the holes and in the rocks world over. To say a tremendous responsibility. Hardly describes the load, but as plain as day stands the fact that it is worthwhile, that we cannot fail. And that is, people will respond both to the message and to the help of Yahshua against the mighty. And how thankful we ought to be that everyone is given the privilege and the opportunity in one way or in another to share the well done, thou good and faithful servant. In the light of the revealed truth, you now plainly see that the Elohim accepts only that which his truth-loving and kingdom-seeking people give willingly and cheerfully. He hates gifts obtained by the begging, high-pressuring, and campaigning. He challenges his people to prove him, now in the gathering time, by the wholeheartedly bringing their tithes and offerings to his storehouse of the judgment of the living, and see if he will not open the windows of heaven and pour down a blessing that there would not be room enough to receive. Then he reassures, and I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground. Neither shall your vine cast your fruit before the time in the field, saith the Yahshua of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, saith the Yahshua of hosts. Malachi 3:11-12. Now that the time has come for the Yahshua to openly manifest his power, anyone wishing prosperity and publicity can have them. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of Yahweh. If it first begin at us, where shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of Elohim? 1 Peter 4:17. Though we may have been in the class which the following words describe, yet we can return unto him, and he will pardon and open our eyes, so that we may now see that there is a difference between him that serveth Elohim and him that serveth him not. For your words have been stout against me, said the Yahshua. Yet you say, oh, what have we spoken so much against thee? You have said it is vain to serve Elohim, and what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Yahshua of the host? And now we can call the proud a happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, they that tempt Elohim are even delivered. Malachi 3:13-15. And then they that feared the Yahshua spake often one to another, and the Yahweh hearkened and heard it, and a book of the remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Yahweh and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith the Yahshua of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth Elohim and him that serveth him not. Malachi 3:16-18. Having returned to Elohim and having tasted of this new experience with the Yahshua, his faithful people long to meet together and speak their blessings, one to another, being mindful of their gladness of the heart and of their longing to communicate his goodness one to another, he promises to write a book of the everlasting remembrance. We can now for sure take hold of the Elohim's promises and make them our own. What a privilege and what an opportunity is now ours. Look and see what a difference there is between Elohim's method for supporting his work and the Roman system that is now carried on by the church. Plate passing, high-powered speeches, big day, book day, high-pressuring, campaigning, selling, auctioneering, harvesting, gathering, birthday offerings, Christmas tree hangings, baby weigh-ins, Dorcas sales, investment funds, and whatnot. As none of these squeezings are biblical, and as all of them are pagan in origin and condemned by the Scriptures, they could not possibly be considered free will offering. Search and see. Instead of the Sabbath keeping, the day is devoted to money raising, and instead of a house of the worship, the church is turned into a den of thieves, disgusting to observers, and most discouraging for a member to invite a friend or a neighbor into the church service. Is there any wonder that Elohim does not now bring many into the church? Testimony, Volume 6, page 371. It was this sort of thing that aroused Luther to action as he saw the priests living in the luxury by exploiting the people's conscience and by the making the poor poor. True worship and Elohim's plan for the supporting the work must now be restored. If there is any revival and reformation needed in any line, it is certainly needed in this line, and no one is excused from having a part in it if he but takes into the heart the word of Elohim, and if he refuses to comply with the aforementioned abomination. For the message will soon reach every Seventh-day Adventist home and the judgment in the house of Elohim, 1 Peter 4:17, and we know that that began in 2002, will then begin. There is therefore no time to waste. These sayings should now engross the whole mind and the whole attention. Now on the day of the restoration, brother, sister, Elohim is calling you to arise unto his plea. Call out, spur not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins, Isaiah 58:1. Be kind, but by no means be sympathetic with the sinner's sin, and do not try to cover the sin. For your own sake and for the sake of the brethren's life, depart from the abominations and receive the mark of the Elohim's deliverance from the slaughter weapons of the five angels. Read Ezekiel 9 and Isaiah 66:15-17, 19, and 20. Faithfully yours, for us to see the need for the cleaning up and for the wisdom for the restoring all things. V.H. Jezreel. Okay, so he's put his initials V.T. Hollis, Jezreel, H.B. Okay, this is the end of our 9 letters to Jezreel, Jezreel's letters. So I hope everyone got a blessing out of it. We're like a few more minutes here on this sermon, so we're going to do just a little review. And our main thing to consider is that this master prophet Jezreel translates into antiquity Elijah, that is to come and restore all things. So we have to first become purified and sanctified here at the kingdom's headquarters before we can restore all things. So it looks like that Yahweh's bringing us down to the bare, the nitty gritty, and so to speak. And so now we're going to close this service with a reading from Obadiah. And it's going to be about Obadiah, the only chapter in Obadiah. And it starts with verse 1. It says, the vision of Obadiah, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, concerning Edom. This is the Adventist church today. We have heard a rumor from the Yahweh, and an ambassador sent among the heathen. Arise ye, and let us rise up against her in the battle. Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen. Thou art greatly despised. The pride of thine heart hath deceived thee. Thou that dwellest in the cliffs of the rock, whose habitation is high. And now remember, in the Laodicea, the seventh church of Asia, they dwelt in the cliffs of the rocks. That's where they had their habitation, literally. That saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and though thou sit thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down, saith Yahweh. If thieves came to thee, if robbers by night, how art thou cut off? Would they not have stolen till they had enough? If the grape gatherers came to thee, would they not leave some grapes? How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? All the men of thy confederacy have brought thee even unto the border. The men that were at peace with thee have deceived thee and prevailed against thee, that they eat thy bread, have laid a wound under thee. There is none understanding in him. Shall I not in that day, saith Yahshua, Yahweh, Elohim, even destroy the wise men out of Edom? Talking about these ministers of the Adventist church and the Davidian. And understanding now the Mount of Esau is your branch Davidians, Isaac branch Davidians. Okay, and thy mighty men, a old Teman, shall be dismayed unto the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter. There's Ezekiel 9 right there. Five angels with slaughtering weapons. Then it says, for thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captives his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. Okay? So Gilead Center was as one of those that had cast lots upon Jerusalem, turns out. But thou shouldst not have looked on the day of thy brother and the day that he became a stranger. When was that? The day that I gave Rodus Johnson a message from heaven, July the 14th, 2002. When he took it wrong and called it a lie and said, he didn't have to do that. When he made the wrong decision, that's when I became a stranger to him. I had been his fellow brethren for 32 years up until then. Neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of their distress. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of thy people, of my people, in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossways to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of the distress. For the day of the Yahshua is near upon all the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. For as you have drunk upon my holy mountain, so shall all the heathen drink continually. Yea, they shall drink, and they shall swallow down, and they shall be as though they had not been. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of the Jacob shall possess their possession. And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. There's your 10 tribes. And the house of Esau, there's your whole 12 tribes for stubble, and they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not be any remain of the house of Esau. That's Mount Zion's 11th hour. The Esau-ites and the Ahabs and the Elis, for the Yahweh has spoken it. And they of the south shall possess the mount of Esau, and they of the plain the Philistines, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim, and the fields of Samaria, and Benjamin shall possess Gilead, and the captivity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even under Zarephath, and the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Sepharad, and shall possess the cities of the south, and saviors, 144,000, shall come upon the Mount Zion. That's the judged amount of Esau. That's the house of the Seventh-day Adventists and the Davidians collectively. And the kingdom shall be the Yahshua's. We're going to bring this close to a close now. We're going to sing, Since Yahshua Came Into My Heart. What a wonderful change in my life has been wrought since Yahshua came into my heart. I have light in my soul for which long I had sought since Yahshua came into my heart. Since Yahshua came into my heart. Since Yahshua came into my heart. Floods of joy o'er my soul, like the sea billows roll. Since Yahshua came into my heart, I have ceased from my wandering and going astray. Since Yahshua came into my heart. And my sins, which for many are all washed away, since Yahshua came into my heart. Since Yahshua came into my heart. Since Joshua came into my heart. Let the joy haunt my soul like the sea billows low. Since Joshua came into my heart, I'm possessed of a hope that is steadfast and sure. Since Joshua came into my heart, and no dark clouds of doubt now my pathway obscure. Since Joshua came into my heart, since Joshua came into my heart, since Joshua came into my heart, but the joy of my soul like the sea billows low. Since Joshua came into my heart, I shall go there to dwell in the city I know. Since Joshua came into my heart, and I'm happy, so happy as onward I go. Since Joshua came into my heart, since Joshua came into my heart, since Joshua came into my heart, but the joy of my soul like the sea billows roll. Since Joshua came into my heart.